Preparing to delve in 3, 2, 1.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Delve. My name is Nathan.
And I am Alex.
Alex, do you want to be the heroes of the story today?
I want to be the very best, like no one ever was.
Well, good news, because on today's episode, we get to talk about being the good party. That's right. What happens when your party decides that they want to be the heroes and do the good and just thing, which I imagine is pretty much most campaigns, actually.
It's the greatest of campaigns.
So this is actually going to be part one of a little two-parter that we do where we discuss what happens when your party is going down essentially the path of the lights or the path of the dark, the good and the bad. But before we go into a darker place, we need to talk about what happens when you decide that you're gonna just help the poor denizens of your world and try to be the generally good party. Yeah, we are imagining that we are the Just Nice League, or whatever you want to call it. We're the good guys.
The Just Ice League?
No, nice. Just Nice League.
No, that we're just bringing ice that's, everywhere to cool, that's,
no,
cool
we're not,
things off.
We're not bringing ice anywhere. We're not doing that to just cool everybody off. We need to bring ice to places to cool off people's hotheads.
Yes.
Okay.
100%.
Okay, great. So what happens when we're the good party? So let's just start with the obvious question. What does the light side party essentially do, and why? What are some examples that you would give right up on the bat of what the nice party would do to help out?
Protecting the homeless.
Okay, great. And maybe you just give money of yourself.
Give money to orphanages.
You give the money to the orphanages, and you don't expect anything in return.
You're nothing but paladins.
You are nothing but paladins. Yeah.
Please do not have a party of only paladins, unless they are all different deities, because that is hilarious.
That would be good. I think it's actually worth noting that there are, you know, some classes that are typically considered to be good, noble classes, the heroes of the story. You mentioned paladins.
Paladins, clerics, I want to say. Not all clerics, obviously, so there's a lot of grave clerics walking around these days.
You see him on the street.
In war clerics.
Just going around the street doing that thing.
Monks are generally seen as probably, you know, good guys. As far as, like, if you're going classes.
As somebody who's played some monks, they're usually referred to as neutral characters generally. I think it's because of the whole balance in the universe thing that they do.
Yeah, probably.
But yeah, I do find myself usually taking the path. But the thing is that I feel like, regardless of who you're even picking, even if you're picking a class that's typically, like, evil, so to speak, like
necromancer.
Exactly. And, like, look, I would love to play a necromancer, but I probably wouldn't be, you know, all out evil in it. I probably would still try to do the nice thing by default. Is something that I tried to do. Maybe I use my skeletons to do a nice, like, jig or dance to cheer up the crowd.
Entertainment.
Yeah.
Your multi-class necromancer bard.
Yeah. The necrobard. That's
bardomancer.
The bardomancer.
I
just resurrect bards.
Yes. Okay. I had used the pile of dead bards.
Yes.
As cover. If you get that reference, you're A+.
But
I had a character once that was a necromancy specialist wizard, multi-class into bar druid. And their shtick was that they were neutral, but they were keeping the balance of life and death.
When you get to that point, though, out of curiosity, can you resurrect animals?
I mean, why not, if you want to? Here's another question, too. On that note, though, when we say the light side, when they do the right thing, are we also intoning the fact that the quote-unquote right thing to a lot of people might be the selfless thing?
I think that that's probably, I was going to try touching on that, is the idea that essentially what you're doing is not going to necessarily give you any gains that are obvious.
Yeah, it's the opposite of this are the characters that are seen as bad or evil. But generally, a lot of those cases, it would probably be seen as self-serving and in one's self-interest.
Right. So we're talking about things that are essentially selfless, done for others, essentially.
Feeding Alex is selfless.
Actually,
I usually feed myself.
Unless you are Alex. If you're anybody
then... It's self-serving.
Yes, exactly. It's evil to eat. But you serve Alex, and then that's a selfless option. That's essentially the good option to take. So the why part of this, I think that's probably a bigger conversation we're going to get to as we go through this. But that leads me to a question, though, that I've always thought about myself, which is the good path forced on parties? Is you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, are you made by the quests you're doing or just like the conventions of games?
That it always feels like when you get into a campaign, the default is, well, you're going to go and help these people and there's not a ton of wiggle room. It feels like you are guided toward the path of being the good guy, so to speak.
I think in a lot of cases, that can definitely be the case, where your party is generally, oh, your quest is to go do X, Y, and Z, and it's not really a morally gray quest as much as it's, we want you to, like, save the kingdom.
Right.
But it's like, what if, like, the players should always have a choice in what they do and how they solve a quest.
Right.
Even if there's only a few different outcomes that should happen or could happen, like, they should have those choices.
Yeah. But
I think it's a lot harder for DMs and campaigns, especially pre-written ones, to have that dynamic outcome where it's like, oh, we're supposed to save the kingdom, but we kind of want to join the guys on this opposing faction and, like, enslave the kingdom.
Right.
It's a lot harder because then you have to, especially if you don't have it written down or planned out.
Yeah.
So I think that's more along those lines, is where it's harder to plan for if you want it to kind of go in this type of story. It's really hard to suddenly take that story and just diverge it completely the other direction for people in a lot of cases.
I always had this idea that, like, even when I was trying to put something together, is that you kind of want your party to be the heroes of the story. Like, that's the general sentiment that you have. So sometimes you'll, as a game master or dungeon master or storyteller, you'll be kind of diverting the attention, or I guess kind of like moving your attention towards the idea of purposefully designing elements that are going to take you down that path. There aren't a ton of times, at least not in my experience, where people will kind of go, this is the current situation of things, so you going to do anything about that? Or because the party could always technically just walk away. But if they walk away,
it's always fun when you have a plot hook and the party walks away from it.
Yeah.
I've definitely read stuff where people are like, oh yeah, you're going on a boat. And it's like, my guy's scared of the water. And then like that one character that you made for the game is just like, nope. But this is why you're like, your session zero is a thing.
Yes. Yeah.
It's because you, unless you have a very open-ended campaign, and those are... I've run a couple of those. Those are not necessarily fun to plan for because it's like, all right, you have all these options. What do you want to do?
Sure.
Most parties, most players don't necessarily want to be given a blank slate like that.
Sure.
Because when you ask players what they want to do, here are your options abroad. Here are your multitude of things you can go do. They're like, I don't really know what I want to do. I don't know what my character wants to do. I don't know where I want to go.
I guess I just always had that idea that you can give players a lot of options, and that's fine, but usually, in especially in a tabletop role-playing setting, you kind of assume that people are going to make some roads that you didn't even imagine they would go down, but you kind of always assume that they're going to be going down a path of being the good force in the world, and not a force that's going to set everything on fire, even though, you know, a lot of times it does get set on fire.
A lot of times there's a lot of fire.
There's a lot of fire. So that actually brings me to the question of, does it make sense most of the time to be the good guy? You know, because that whole thing where you're selfless and you're giving of yourself and the money and everything, it doesn't always make sense in the scenario that you've been given.
Right.
You know? I keep thinking to myself, like, even when I'm playing certain games, if you were to take, like, a good karma path in, like, a Jade Empire or, like, the light side quests in KOTOR, any of those, Fable, you can name them, when you play in those video games, You're giving of yourself and you're being the hero and you're doing the good thing, but even then they kind of give you rewards for doing that. You know, there are certain abilities and such that you get by being the good person rather than the bad person.
Right, and in some cases even that can be renown or fame.
Yep, yep.
And it's not necessarily a tangible monetary or item type reward, although a lot of times it's that as well, because with doing these good things, people are like, for doing such a good deed, we grant you this mansion, sum of money, a cloak of wonder, 16 wishes, and a brothel.
Right, you know, there's that whole thing, like, if you get into BioShock is a good example of that too. Like, when you get to the Little Sisters, yeah, you're gonna get a lot of Adam if you harvest Little Sisters, but if you save them, you still get some, and periodically as you go along, the Little Sisters will now give you special gifts and abilities that you would not normally have. In a Red Dead Redemption, if you become infamous, you're going to have a lot of trouble with the law. If you're doing the right thing, you're not going to have trouble with the law as much. There's usually still some kind of net benefit to you in some way by doing what is essentially selfless, which always makes me wonder, is it actually selfless if you know you're
in your best interest, if it makes things easier on you?
Right, exactly. Or if you know it. Yeah.
So I actually thought about this the other night while I was listening to a YouTube video at work, and this is one of the many YouTube videos by Simon Whistler.
Oh, yeah.
Because that is my life now.
The 50 channels of Simon Whistler.
Yeah, 50 Shades of Simon, as it were. He was doing a promo for one of his other pieces of work, because, again, 50 Shades of Simon. Yeah. That's going to be TM.
TM.
We're gonna blaze that to him.
Trace magic. 50 Shades of Simon, yeah.
But he has a podcast called The Casual Criminalist.
Oh.
I don't think I was listening to that. This is tangential to this.
Okay.
But it might have been that. It was about serial killer fandoms.
Oh. Okay.
Like serial killer groupie type things.
Yeah.
Or that type of content. Where people are really enthralled by and like write letters to and get married to. All that stuff.
Yeah.
And I kind of came across the thought, this is totally tangential, but what if you have your party that's doing all these things, but somebody takes hold of that and, like, starts sending them, like, letters, and, like, a courier finds them, like, oh, you've got a letter. It's a fan, as it were.
Oh.
But what if this person becomes, obsessed with the party or a certain player character in the party that's doing something? Maybe they're it could be an NPC character, like human or elf, or maybe it's like a goblin and it's scrawled in some just really poorly written common.
Sure.
For instance, what if the party's going out clearing tons and tons and tons of goblin boroughs, whatever they live in. Fuck.
Warrens?
But say...
I don't know.
Yeah, but say, like, say they're slaughtering all these bugbears and goblins. Yeah. And there's this one goblin that keeps noticing this and seeing it, and they're enthralled by this ever-unleashing genocide of goblins that's going on by the party. But they're, like, enthralled by it, and you kind of treat them like these people act with a serial killer type deal, and you start giving them fan mail, and they start showing up and, like, giving the party gifts or something like that.
Yeah.
But then it turns out they're only doing that because they're like, oh, yeah, they see you as absolute murderers.
Yeah, you do have to say, like, I remember this from Fable. If anyone out there has ever played Fable, I'm sure you have. But there's this whole thing with the good and bad, like the good and evil points that you get for things. If you go and you go into a town and you start like just killing people in the town, you're going to get evil points. Like, you know, that's just the way it is. But then bandits. Okay, if you go and start just killing bandits, you get good points. But you imagine from the perspective of like a kid that was hanging out at the bandit camp. Right? you're getting all this attention for being the good guy, and everybody in your camp is getting slaughtered for it. There's definitely a perspective issue there.
Yeah. And that's like, a whole other, again, that's a whole other thing.
Oh, that is a whole other thing. We might actually cover that in the second part, because that is definitely a way of looking at things. But the general idea, too, is there might actually be some real consequence. Like, we always think about there being some negative consequences for doing the bad thing. That doesn't necessarily mean that there can't be some bad consequences for doing the good thing.
Oh, like, there can totally be terrible consequences for doing the quote-unquote good thing. What is socially acceptable as the good thing.
Here's an easy example for you. Imagine you're going into a town, and the leader of the town, okay, your local governor or whatever, says that I need you to go and take care of this group of bandits, or I need you to go and take care of we've got a roaming monster, and he's going around and he's killing a bunch of sheep. We can't have the sheep eater around. The chupacabra basically is going around and killing our livestock, and that's not good. You need to do something about that. And so your party thinks to themselves, oh yeah, we don't want that to happen. We'll go out and we'll take care of the faux chupacabra.
The El Macabre.
The El Macabre. Okay, so good. And so they go out and you do that for the governor, and the governor is really happy. But, you know, then later after you've done that thing and you think you've done your good job and you've saved the livestock and everything, you realize, like, one, the creature that you just killed was like an endangered creature. They didn't bother to tell you that. And also, the governor had, like, sheep futures and was not very good to his people and really just wanted to corner the sheep market.
Oh, yeah. And they also, that creature kept away the dire sheep that would slaughter all the, you know, townsfolk.
You've destroyed the ecosystem, basically, by trying to do this.
There's
destroyed it.
An episode of Adventure Time. This one, okay, so basically there's this monster that's a bully, and they're these townsfolk that are literal, like, buildings that are characters.
Mm.
So this guy's bullying all of them, and Finn, obviously being the hero here, takes the bully, and, like, they're like, they reform him, right? They make him an upstanding fellow, and Jake is Jake. So anyways, so they make him up, and they go to the town, and it's like, wait, what's going on? They're being attacked by these werewolves that are, like, librarian? I don't know. But there's something, I can't remember what they're called. Sorry. But they're, like, really intelligent werewolves.
Sure.
They might be aware wolves, I think. But they're like, oh yeah, so Billy was, like, a natural deterrent for us. By bullying all of them, he had this aura of just, like, jerkiness that kept us away. It's lethal to us werewolves. So by removing him, you just took a part of this ecosystem, and now we're attacking all the villagers unbridled because there's nothing there to stop us now. Mm-hmm. So Finn's like, oh my god, we turned him into a good guy, but we need him to be a jerk, or else all these people are going to get slaughtered.
Yeah.
So it's like a really good episode, and I think it actually would do a really good job kind of explaining what we're talking about right this second.
Right, absolutely. So just go watch that.
Just watch that instead of listening. Bye.
Bye. See you. Okay. We'll be here when you come back. But yeah, I feel like there's a lot of things where the party doesn't do a lot of research on whether the thing that they're doing that's good is necessary. But in that case, I think this actually kind of lends itself to the next question that I had. Because it does feel like a lot of times those questions aren't really... We don't assume that players are going to ask a lot of those deeper questions about the ramifications. And so my question here is, are players encouraged to be the traditionally good heroes in gaming?
I think they are, especially on their own accord if they're not asking those deeper questions.
Right, because if we ask those deeper questions, we would have a much more morally gray area that would cause them to maybe not do the thing that we think that they're going to do.
And I personally love the morally gray areas when I'm running a game.
Mm.
I like your position to not be completely clear. I like you having to question whether what you're doing is right or wrong, self-serving, or better. We had that whole thing I think I've talked about before where we had these two old guys who had these two different opinions, and they turned out to be ancient dragons.
Mm-hmm.
And one was a red ancient dragon, the other is a gold ancient dragon. They should be enemies, but they were not. And their opinions and viewpoints had changed over like a millennia of just living, you know, intertwined.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So were these old guys, you know, they're in polymorph. They had like, one of them was like, yeah, people are, you know, inherently good. And the other's like, people are inherently evil. Mm-hmm. You would think the gold dragon would be like, yeah, people are inherently, you know, good. And the red dragon would be people are inherently evil because they're typically gold is good and red is an evil alignment dragon. But we had them swapped because more interesting that way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, you assume a certain level about what's going on. But then if you pull back that and you kind of take the plot and twist it, it's really interesting.
I was going to say, it's sort of like that whole idea of like two deities sitting down and playing chess. You know, it's that whole thing, like, you know, they're going to, like, you have two beings of great power that are going to now philosophize about the nature of the universe and move pieces around on a chessboard that are essentially us, and it's very difficult at that point for you as a mortal to truly comprehend exactly the weight of decision-making on one end or another.
Right.
As that goes.
Another, I think, decent example here would probably be Batman.
Yeah, because if you think, they've made the case, too, that if you look at, like, The Dark Knight, there's a lot of reason to think that the Joker was the hero of that. And that Batman actually as a force, not real, like, essentially an authoritarian, like, police state dude. Like, you know, taking the law into his own hands, vigilante justice, working outside of the system, you know?
And on the one side, you know, Batman, you know, Bruce Wayne is doing what he thinks is the good thing, the best for Gotham.
Right.
You know, he's cleaning up crime. He's getting rid of criminals.
Mm.
And the police force is like, should we do something about him? Because he's kind of doing like a good job. And they're like, no, we shouldn't. But at the same time, like, he's operating outside of the jurisdiction of the law.
Right.
As well. Which makes him a criminal.
Right. Right. Right.
But then, as you said, the Joker was, I think, film theorists actually did a whole thing on that.
They did, yeah.
Where it was, you know, Joker's the hero, because before, you know, once he was doing what he was doing, crime de-escalated, the mob was taken care of, and all of this stuff, and he, like, the Joker helped clean up Gotham.
Right.
Better than Batman.
Yeah, because Batman's solution to taking care of, like, the cartel, I can't remember, Falcone crime family, try to catch them and then put them in jail, but there's still a lot of money there, so the family just keeps moving on, and the Joker's solution to that whole thing was, well, I'm just going to take their money. Now they have no money to deal with. They don't have a reason to stay. That's how he gets rid of it. And that's why, like, when people were like, okay, so you stole the money just so that you could burn it. Why'd you do that? It's like, because it's not about the money. It's about the message. It's that's and it works. And then the other thing that people talk about a lot with Batman is, yeah, he's the hero of the story, but how much of it is escalation that causes all of the criminals that end up trying to come out so that they can defeat the Batman? That's what you get in the in the last part of the Nolan trilogy with, like, Bane. Like, how much of Bane is, I want to break the bat? His whole character is about that.
Oh, yeah.
So you can technically do the good thing, as we imagine the good thing being, but there's some gray area there. Also, Batman works by a nature of instilling fear in others.
Yeah, I think actually the Batman works really well for this example in general here, because the escalation thing.
Yeah.
If you have your party going out, doing all the good things, stopping criminals, killing monsters, they're gonna be seen as, you know, potentially people, like, guards trust them and townspeople look up to them or think they're a hero, but bad guys have a network too.
Yep.
Like, monsters allegedly talk.
Yeah.
Criminals organize, you know, so if you're, you know, ogres are talking about, like, unless you wholesale slaughter whole towns and nobody escapes, but, like, if you're running a game, always have somebody escape to tell the message or something.
Oh, always.
Something that they can figure it out from. Yeah. Criminals are going to organize against you just like they did against Batman. They escalate. Your heroes might be doing all this really good stuff, but there's going to come a time when there's going to come escalation for them. Or there should come a time where all that goody-goody is not so goody-goody for you.
If you look at a lot of, like, those superhero team-ups, you look at, like, when Justice League or Avengers happens, and there's a lot of collateral damage in those scenarios when you get around to it, too. Even if you're trying to do the right thing, you're bringing a war, essentially, to populated areas, for that matter. That's a problem. And also the whole thing about, like, who is giving you the mission. Like, is it a local lord? Do they have an agenda? You don't necessarily. Or are you acting on your own? Did anyone authorize you to do this? You might have the idea of, well, I don't need to be authorized. It's obviously the good thing or the bad thing. But somebody else might not actually see it that way. And like you were saying, how long until, you know, oh, well, we have this group of the do-gooders that are out there trying to destroy all the monsters. And then Sauron's army comes down over the hills and says, we're destroying Helm's Deep. Sorry, folks.
Yeah. And the Ents are like, no!
Yeah. The Ents go to war and they die. A lot of them die.
Yeah. And on that note, too, like, where you're saying, well, what's the, maybe the Lord's got an agenda, too. On another note, too, where we talked about the Paladins, what if you were to use something like Divine Intervention, for instance?
Yeah.
But, again, the plot twists are really nice when you take those tropes and turn them on their heads. So instead of your Paladin's deity coming down in a vision to your Paladin and saying that they need to go destroy the Den of Evil.
Sure.
And it's located on 4th and Main at this building, and it's a brothel or something, or it's a bar, or maybe it's just a tax house, you know, it's the Den of Evil. Sure. Doesn't matter what it is, but what if you flip that on its head, and it's not really divine intervention from their god, or prophecy from them, or a message from the god? What if it's somebody somewhere with power that is going, all right, well, I can fake it.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, an imposter. What if somebody found a way to make it seem like it's their deity talking to them and told them to go do this evil thing for them?
Yeah.
Not only then would your Paladin be like, what have I done? It would be their god would be displeased. In a Paladin specific sense, they would need to atone for that.
That leads to a whole character arc in and of itself, even though you're technically the good guy in this scenario. So
you did what you thought was good. You were told it was a good thing to do. Personally, I always have Paladins in general when I'm playing games, because they have to be lawful good, generally. I make them, the rule for my Paladins games is they are lawful, but they are lawful to their deity in their compass.
Right.
So if your deity, like, you can have a paladin of whatever god you want. I don't care.
helm.
But if you have a god that is chaotic evil, you are lawful to that code of conduct your god in there, and
well, that makes sense.
All of their stuff is. So if like, my god likes to set fire to children, it's like, well, your god would really love it if you set fire to children.
I guess that kind of falls into the what do we consider to be good, like from a perspective standpoint.
Right, and we can go into that later if you want, but I think personally for paladins, it's like, if your god thinks spiders are kind of awesome and don't kill them ever, and like killing people, like murder and thievery is good, then you murdering and thieving stuff might be good in the eyes of your deity, but it might be bad in the eyes of society.
Sure. Yeah. But again, like, kind of taking it back to that question about, like, are players encouraged to be the traditionally good heroes? I don't think for most people's campaigns, they really dig into the, like, are these decisions that the player is making actually beneficial to the society as a whole? I feel like it's mostly go to take care of the evil thing that's out there trying to destroy the planet.
The evil.
There's a giant evil thing, folks. And you can make the evil thing very complex, and you can give it depth, and you can give your good characters depth. But there is always, like, kind of a general underlying, most of the time at least, a general underlying idea that, you're on the right side of this, they're on the wrong side of this, and you gotta take them out. And that's gonna be good. Everybody's gonna be happy, and there will be much rejoicing.
Another thing you could do there too is you could have your players, your party on the right side, or what the perceived good side of the conflict is. Maybe they're fighting for their country or their lord. And then what if it's like a war? What if they're fighting on the side or whatever? Or perhaps monsters overrun, just kill your lord and destroy the city. And somebody else claims the land. And suddenly you're insurgents.
What if
your war is lost, and now you are seen as people that need to be hunted down? It's not that you necessarily were doing something bad, but now, because you are doing something good, in the eyes of everything that you were doing, where you were doing it, it was considered good. But now the people in charge are like, that's not good. You're opposing us. You need to be taken out. Unless you're mercenaries, which in that case, it's like, well, we just work for gold.
I mean, if you just kind of go, well, like, hey, I go where the gold is, you're not necessarily good or bad. You're just working for a paycheck.
And then you will be seen in another light entirely.
Absolutely. I feel like that's more or less the neutral path for a lot of people. If you don't have any particular goal or objective or agenda, you're just there for the paycheck. I come in, I do the job, and I get paid, and I'm happy with that.
I don't think most parties and RPGs do it just for the paycheck.
I was never under the impression, whenever I'm playing games, that I'm doing it for the paycheck at all, even when that is kind of the precursor to go forward. Like in our 1879 game, you know, it starts off with each one of our players being approached by this lord to say that we have a mission for you and you will get compensated well for it, but there is a larger thing inside of that, that when we're going to check all of these sites in like the middle of Caracas, out in the jungles and on the plains and in the middle of the U.S., that we're also doing a lot of research and solving crimes and mysteries along the way that we hope will be beneficial at least to the lord that gave us the mission. But the whole overarching ideas, well, why did you go on the quest to begin with? It's a lucrative thing. Like,
but do you have you ever, in that game, have you questioned?
Oh, from the very beginning, the motivations were suspect. The whole notion of that particular game was that it starts in England, it's an alternate history, no one's familiar with, like, Earth Dawn and that kind of thing. 1879 is like a period version of it, but basically, there's this rabbit hole, essentially, that put a bunch of magic into the world that you know. So it's Earth, but now with magic, and some people get transformed into orcs and elves and
Earth, you know, plus.
It's Earth plus. It's Earth with benefits. And so the Earth with benefits is now has created a bunch of things here that are what we would refer to as supernatural, but is now just like stuff that they have to deal with. So they want to research these phenomenon. And so this government agent is basically saying that on behalf of the government, we would like your team to go down and take a look at some of these step pyramids, and maybe there's this Sphinx in a cage, and a whole bunch of other things that are going on. And if you are, like, captured or killed or anything, we'll disavow all knowledge of you. But, you know, you come back and you give us information and you turn over all of that to us, then we'll give you a good stipend and, you know, cover your expenses for going, and then send you out on another mission. So, but obviously from that very setup, it does sound like there's some stuff going on behind the scenes that you're trying to uncover. I don't know how the party will react if we ever got to the point where it turned out that the people that we were working for didn't necessarily have the best of intentions, and if that would change whether we're going to keep working for a paycheck or if we are going to actually actively work against that. But it does seem like every time we get onto an adventure, our goal is to solve people's problems and uncover mysteries that are presented to us, even though that's not necessarily why we're getting the money. like we were asked to go and investigate a step pyramid in South America. Okay. They just want to get an idea of what is there. They probably didn't ask us to search every room or try to translate a bunch of glyphs or have to fight a giant Tyrannosaurus thing. Those were kind of like supplemental. We did those in our free time, essentially.
Do you get paid extra for that?
No.
Hazard pay, maybe?
I think we tried to make the case for it, but they gave us, they were going to pay us fairly well for the time period anyway. You know, it's 1879, and I think we got money back for the expenses, and then we also got, like, I think it was, like, maybe £25 for being, of course, we were away for a few months, but, expenses plus £25 in that time. I mean, I was able to buy myself a workshop and get a few, laborers to help me work on stuff. So,
hey, there you go.
So, yeah, it's like, that ended up being, like, maybe £4 or £5 a month. Something like that. Plus I get scrap, all kinds of scrap, so I can build my stupid inventions. So, hey, you know, it was lucrative for me. Essentially, that's rent on an entire, you know, workshop in downtown London for 5 months, you know. But, you know, when we go to the, you know, the dinner party that we're asked to go to the lords and ladies and everything, and it turns out that there are apparently a werewolf thing going on.
All the normal.
Yeah, our base reaction was never, you know, just let that go. Yeah, just let it happen. No, it's to stop the people that are trying to get away with valuable information that could be detrimental. And we weren't getting paid for that. We were just getting a nice meal, which I guess is something. I probably squirreled away one or two rolls. I'm not saying that I didn't steal a couple of the nice silverware forks while I was there.
Evil.
Hey, you know what? They're not going to miss a couple forks, okay? I can use them to make some shock projectiles. I'm going to use them. But, you know, I was always under the impression, even though there's money involved, we're not really there to just do bad things. We're there kind of to do the right thing. And then there will be money, even if we weren't doing that. Our mission has always essentially been kind of neutral, investigatory stuff. So there isn't really a notion that you're going to do the right thing or the wrong thing in that. I'm trying to think when I was playing Circle Stone, when I was Rembrandt. What was our motivation for that mission? Our motivation was we were securing funding for Circle Stone from some other towns. And we were going around trying to do that because our community is sort of more of an artist collective of sorts. But we were securing funding for them. It's just that on our way back, we end up with a giant orc war we have to deal with, killing a lot of people. And we have to stop them.
Those pop up from time to time.
They pop up from time to time. And no one really told us that we had to try and free the ice dragon. But we did. Or the dire wolf that was imprisoned. But we did. Sure. You know? And yeah, that dire wolf came back and killed a few orcs for us. And so that was a net benefit. But, you know, but you know, we didn't have any illusion that they were going to do that at the time. So generally, the idea was to do the right thing, even if your base mission was not necessarily that. But there was one other question that I wanted to ask before we finish up. And that is it less fun to be good than to be bad?
I think that depends on how you play your good characters. Now, I think if you were to play someone like Superman type, goody-goody, Mr. Always Doing the Right Thing, I think it would be less fun. Because it's, you know, it's not that you can do no wrong, it's that you actually do no wrong. You're, you know, Dragon Scout.
You're still playing Dragon Scouts.
I think it's not less fun. I think it's less controversial. And I think sometimes controversy adds fun, or conflict can add fun. And not in the fact that conflict and controversy themselves are fun as players to have, or characters to have. I think it's that they offer you opportunities to create more fun and interesting outcomes.
Yeah, I think the reason why people may automatically assume that it's not as much fun to be good is because a lot of times good characters are not given the kind of complexity or the richness that sometimes they need to. They're usually just kind of like the arbiters to do the right thing to stop.
I've definitely had a player in a game I ran who was a lawful good paladin. So I was like, all right, you're in this town, you have a bit of free time, what do you want to do? And when it came to the paladin, they're like, is there anyone who needs help? I'm like, no, it's a pretty nice town. There's not a lot of homeless people or anything like that. It's like, who can I go and benefit? It's like playing the super selfish. Like, all they wanted to do was try and, like, help people. It's like, dude, nobody here. It's an idyllic town. You don't come across these very often, and it's fairly ritzy, like, they have a lot of money, so they take care of their people.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not some rundown backwaters woods where everyone's got no teeth.
Right, exactly. This is not that kind of place. Yeah.
I should have been like, this person has no teeth. They really need some teeth.
Can you go get some teeth for them?
Give him your teeth.
Can you go make some teeth for them?
Give him your own teeth out of your own mouth.
Yeah, exactly. Paladin might do it.
On a completely similar side note there, I've always wanted to have... Have you seen the movie Dragonheart?
I think a long time ago. It's been a while.
Do you know the premise? It's the knight is supposed to slay the dragon, ends up making a deal with the dragon. So the dragon keeps going to towns to, like... It's voiced by Sean Connery, by the way.
See, that's the thing that I remember about Dragonheart, was that Sean Connery was a dragon.
Yeah. So the dragon keeps going to these towns to attack them, and the knight keeps coming in to save the town from the dragon and slay the dragon and making off like a bandit. Because, you know, I've always thought about, like, what if, like, in the D&D or even RPG universe, like, see it sometimes. I don't know how often you see it, but often you see, like, there's not very many instances I'm aware of where a world has a lot of blight or plague or pandemics since we're in 2021.
Sure.
But you would think in a world like that, those things shouldn't be very rampant where clerics and paladins and magical healing is abundant. What if you were to go to a town that was everyone was sick and you have a single cleric in your party and they're like, yeah, I'll fucking heal all you guys.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, just come all to me, bless some water, you know, treat the sick, heal wounds, cure disease, whatever. And it's like, oh, you'd be seen as, like, the saviors. You could make a fucking racket out of that so easily. You got a druid? That's right. I'm going to go poison this water supply up ahead. You guys come in 3 days from now after like 20 people have died and cure the town and like become heroes. It's like you could easily create that as a racket if you wanted a morally gray party. I mean, that's not even morally gray. That's like straight up probably chaotic evil.
Yeah.
But it's like you could easily do that kind of thing in a D&D game where it's like. Because you don't, in a single cleric, or a single paladin of high enough level, in a game setting like that, in a world setting like that, can be extremely powerful in that setting. Not because they're, like, super combat effective, but because they, like, yeah, by the power of my god, I heal all of your sick. So unless you, in the game, find a way to necessarily mitigate that, you can just run away with that.
Yeah.
Like, I see no reason you couldn't get a cleric to be ordained as a saint if you had that type of shit going on. Mm-hmm. And, like, just so abysmally rich.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, like, that's a racket.
Yeah. Why do I want to go do missions for a lord? I can become a lord.
Yeah.
And, like, you hire thugs. Anytime an investigator comes to see what's going on, you have them murdered.
Yeah.
Or just pay them off. Who cares?
Yeah, I think that's the other side of the coin. That's you've definitely reached in and ended up on a whole other. But until you do a lot of soul searching and ask yourself that it's the are we the baddies conversation, you know. At that point, yeah, I don't know. I think it's mostly the idea that you know good characters in terms of being less fun. Good characters can be tons of fun. I think it's just a matter of they're not usually as richly drawn out as the villains, which is why they ask a lot of actors, like, why do you want to be the villain in this? It's like, because the villain's more interesting.
I think in the next one, we can actually get into using good characters as the bad guy.
Ah, yes.
It's a thing we can get into if you want to on the next episode. Also, I know James? James had asked before, I believe, how do you make bad guys good?
Okay, like, it might have been James, yeah.
I think it was James. James, if it was you, let us know. If it wasn't James, you let us know. I'm too lazy to look back in the chat while we're recording. but essentially, it was, and I think we should do an episode of that some point here. Where we address talking about making notable villains, or notable big bad evil guys, or whatever you want to call them, antagonists, as it were. Mm-hmm. There is a lot there that we could unpack.
Oh, yeah.
And I definitely have a question I want to ask you about that. And anyone listening, too, I would like you to think about your favorite villain in all of media.
Mm-hmm.
Be it gaming, film, books, don't care what it is. We want to know, who is your favorite villain and what about them makes them stand out to you? And if you have an answer to that, like, send it to us on Twitter or our Discord. I know Tabletop Salt and Seago are really great about doing that stuff in Discord. The other guys, you guys are great too, and gals.
Yep, yep.
You're pretty good at that when we ask pointed questions.
So we appreciate it, yeah.
But yeah, if you want us to do that episode on notable villains,
yeah,
let us know what villains you really love. I have an answer for this question. I'm not going to share right now.
Yeah, and I probably have a good answer for it too. But we'll save that. We'll save it. We'll do a villain episode at some point.
Maybe we should do the good guy episode, the bad guy episode, and then the notable villain episode. We'll see what time has in store for us.
We'll see. You want to do good, bad, and then ugly?
Yeah. And it's just going to be a picture of us on the album.
It's just going to be that picture of us at the reunion.
Oh, my God.
The ugly episode. Welcome to hell, folks.
It's just going to be the colors inverted, so it's even worse.
Oh, yeah, I could totally do a color inversion. That would be great. It'd be Mirror Universe us. That's good. Yeah. Anyway.
Bizarro Nathan!
Oh, God, no one wants
He's just socially normal.
Jesus. Well, I think that's a great way to lead into the bad conversation. But first of all, we should probably end this episode. Thank you. Thank you all for listening. And yes, we are looking for notable villains. You have a little bit of time. We can do an episode about that. But we are wondering who you liked. And I would also be interested to know if you have any good stories about the bad guy becoming the good guy. Because I'm sure...
No using Mastermind as your example. I mean, you can actually use it. I'm just saying.
You could.
Mastermind was a decent movie where that exact thing.
Mastermind was a good one, yeah. Yeah, that was actually a good movie, surprisingly enough. But anyway, if you want to get all of the good gaming news that's out there, Alex, where could they go on the internet?
Somewhere else.
Yep, they could go somewhere else. Don't go to our site.
You can go to delvecast.com, where we've got all of our episodes, Nathan's gaming attempts, as it were. Everything we do is over up on that site there.
That's right. And Citanium Mine and all of our articles and everything, it's there. You can click on our Patreon banner. You can check out some of the benefits of becoming a patron. By the way, thank you to our shiny level patron, Bonnie Ainsworth. Thank you for keeping the digital lights on. And thank you to Drunk Paul, of course, for helping us with our Discord channel. You can also find us on the, what do you call it? Those social media things. I think we're on
sure.
The social medias.
We use those once in a while.
Once in a while.
If you add us, we definitely use them.
Yes, if you add us, we definitely use them. I am at Citanium.
I am at EXP Limited, and our show is at Dell Podcast.
And you can always ask us questions over there. If you happen to be on our Discord, you can ask us there. But we would be very interested to know about your feedback for this episode and any other that you might be listening to. And with that, I suppose we have to prep ourselves, or gird our loins, so to speak, so that we can get ready for what happens.
We have to raid the pantry.
We have to raid the pantry because I think we're going to be raiding a whole lot of pantries of the less fortunate in the next episode. Because we're gonna be bad company next, folks. We're going down that road. Until we get there, thank you for joining us. We'll see you on the next episode. Bye, everybody.
Bye.